If you could speak directly to Elon Musk, what would you say?
F off.
That's it.
Oh, Congressman Jasmine Crockett, you go, girl. That's sort of the very short version of today's broadcast.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Yep.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it's not, but get
I'm
better.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, also elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. We're also up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, and Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for you on the internets, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com, now in our 22nd year of troublemaking and muckraking. Thank you very much for joining us for another thrilling edition of The Bradcast. Well, the blowback is beginning, it seems to me, at least for the moment, at least a little bit. Desi Doyen, am I getting leaning too forward on my skis to suggest as much?
No, I think that it does appear that there are lots of folks who are finally saying, hey, we're going to stand up and fight back on this stuff.
And there are a lot, no, I don't want to say a lot yet, but there are folks in D.C. who are responding to those people saying those things. We've been watching all week as members of Congress, both Republican and Democratic, have been getting an earful from constituents at public town halls back in their districts. Republicans in swing districts in several states faced particularly angry crowds demanding that they take action to stop Donald Trump's demolition man, Elon Musk, from continuing his rampage and gutting and arguably unlawfully dismantling the U.S. federal government. And some of those Republicans have said, have claimed, well, they intend to inquire about those concerns with the White House or some such tepid nonsense. We will see what they do, but they are at least responding to it, at least some of them. It's clear, I think, that the worm, at least for now, is beginning to turn against what Trump and Musk are doing. It is, after all, wreaking havoc for members of Congress in both red and blue states alike, as their constituents are very much beginning to feel the pain directly. And in lieu of any particular elected leader stepping forward to lead the opposition just yet, it is we, the people on the ground, who seem to be turning that tide. We'll see. We'll see, but keep it going. Now is not the time to take your foot off the pedal.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, if you do nothing, you will get nothing. So why not?
And we will be joined in a bit by a guest to discuss something that you can do this week to make your own voice be heard without actually even using your voice in one sense, or without even leaving your house, if you prefer. A national economic no-shop blackout scheduled for Friday, February 28th. Don't buy anything all day long if you can help it. Jonathan Simon will be here shortly to discuss that. In the meantime, blowback against Musk and the administration is also coming from inside the House today. Sort of. Musk's house, sort of. At least the governmental office that he has essentially adopted to sort of officialize his so-called Department of Governmental Efficiency, or DOGE, which is not actually a real department at all, nor does it appear to have anything to do with government efficiency. But that's a separate matter, some of which we discussed on yesterday's show. But a real governmental department was sort of co-opted by the Trump administration to kind of make DOGE official, sort of. The United States Digital Service was established during the during President Barack Obama's administration. It was formed in response to the initially botched rollout of the federalhealthcare.gov site, the portal used by millions of Americans in largely red states that refused to set up their own state version of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare exchanges to help folks select and purchase federally subsidized medical plans under the Democrats' landmark 2010 legislation, which, by the way, since then has become wildly popular and has helped allow anywhere from 30 to 50 million Americans have access to affordable or even free health care who did not have it before. So the U.S. Digital Service was stood up to sort of modernize the nation's computer systems across pretty much all federal departments. Many of the staffers previously held senior roles at big tech companies like Google and Amazon and came on board out of a sense of patriotism in many cases, taking jobs in the federal government that might not pay them as much as they would be able to make in the private sector, but they felt an obligation to do so to help their nation, if you can imagine such a thing. Nonetheless, the service would eventually be tasked with doing things like improving services for veterans. They're the ones that helped to create the free government-run portal so that tax filers do not have to go through third parties like TurboTax or H&R Block. And while I believe that that free service is still available this year, at least for some states federally, Donald Trump has said that he's going to shut down that free service for tax filers. The U.S. Digital Service, USDS, also devised systems to improve the way the federal government purchases technology and stuff like that. But after his inauguration, Trump renamed the U.S. Digital Service as the U.S. DOGE Service. Same letters, but yeah, you get it. And it gives Elon Musk and his band of teenage DOGE bros an official-ish government department out of which to be based, even if the Department of Governmental Efficiency isn't actually a real thing, has not been authorized by Congress, has no budget. But on Tuesday, as reported by AP, more than 20 civil service employees at the so-called U.S. DOGE service now resigned en masse in protest, saying that they were refusing to use their technical expertise anymore to, quote, dismantle critical public services. That, according to a joint resignation letter that was signed by 21 senior staffers at the agency. Quote, we swore to serve the American people and uphold our oath to the Constitution across presidential administrations, the staffers wrote. However, it has become clear that we can no longer honor those commitments. The employees also warned in the letter that many of those enlisted by Musk to help him slash the size of the federal government were political ideologues who did not have the necessary skills or experience for the task. The mass resignation of engineers, data scientists, and product managers at the agency, all of whom had previously held All 21 of these folks had previously held these senior positions for major tech companies. They said in the letter that they joined the government out of a sense of duty to public service. And this letter comes amid a flurry of court challenges that have sought to stall or stop or unwind the efforts by Musk and Trump to fire or coerce hundreds of thousands of government workers out of jobs. Just over the past few minutes, CNN reports that on Tuesday, Donald Trump saw three losses in 90 minutes. Three different judges delivered setbacks for Trump in a series of cases on USAID and State Department funding and refugee admissions and federal funding. So Donald Trump is losing in court, at least for now. And now people who were to be instrumental to what Musk hoped to do to destroy the government are saying, yeah, we're not going to help you with that. The day after his inauguration, the staffers at the so-called U.S. Doge service wrote, they were called into a series of interviews that foreshadowed the secretive and disruptive work of Musk's Doge. According to the staffers, people wearing White House visitors' badges, some of whom would not give their names, grilled the nonpartisan employees about their qualifications and their politics. Some, the staffers say, made statements that indicated they had a very limited technical understanding. Many were young, seemed guided by ideology and fandom of Elon Musk.
Ew.
Not about improving government technology, according to the staffers who quit on Tuesday. Quote, several of these interviewers refused to identify themselves, ask questions about political loyalty, which, by the way, you are absolutely not allowed to do, or at least not supposed to do. That is verboten, to use a word that some of these folks might understand. You're not allowed to do that in federal government workforce issues, discuss loyalty, your politics in any sense. The staffers say they attempted to pit colleagues against each other, demonstrated limited technical ability. This process created significant security risks, the staffers warned. Earlier this month, about 40 staffers in that office were laid off, dealing a devastating blow to the government's ability to administer and safeguard its own technological footprint, they wrote. Quote, these highly skilled civil servants were working to modernize Social Security, veteran services, tax filing, health care, disaster relief, student aid, and other critical services before they were fired for no apparent reason. Quote, their removal endangers millions of Americans who rely on these services every day. The sudden loss of their technology expertise makes critical systems and Americans' data less safe. Remember when I mentioned yesterday on the show that none of this was about government efficiency? Well, there you go. Another example. Those who remained, about 65 staffers who were not part of that initial group that was fired, were integrated into Doge's government-slashing efforts, and about a third of those who were still at the agency quit very loudly on Tuesday in protest of Musk and the Doge bros. Quote, we will not use our skills as technologists to compromise core government systems, jeopardize American sensitive data, or dismantle critical public services, they wrote. We will not lend our expertise to carry out or legitimize Doge's actions. Good for them. The slash and burn effort Musk is leading diverges from what was initially outlined by Trump during the 2024 presidential campaign, AP notes. After the election, however, Musk hinted there was more to come, posting to X, that's the social media site once known as Twitter, that he also ruined for everybody after buying it.
True.
Musk said, quote, threat to democracy? Nope. Threat to bureaucracy. Well, if his goal was to make sure American bureaucracy didn't work anymore, he seems to be well on his way there. Last week, Musk stood on stage at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, where he boasted of his exploits and he hoisted a blinged out Chinese made chainsaw above his head. A chainsaw that was gifted to him at the event by Argentinian strongman President Javier Milei.
This is the chainsaw for bureaucracy. Chainsaw!
Jesus, what an idiot.
Yeah, I can think of some other words, but I'm not allowed to say them on
FCC radio, please. Thank you. The bulk of the previous layoffs in the digital service, AP notes, focused on people in roles like designers, product managers, human resources, and contracting staff. The engineers were allowed to stay, according to interviews with current and former staff. Of the 40 people let go earlier this month, only one of them was an engineer. He happened to be an outspoken Kamala Harris supporter on his private blog. So, yeah, he was most likely fired unlawfully for his political beliefs. Jonathan Kamens said in an interview with AP that he believes he was fired because he publicly endorsed Kamala Harris. He said, quote, "I believe that Elon Musk is up to no good, and I believe that any data that he gains access to is going to be used for purposes that are inappropriate and harmful to Americans." Other U.S. Digital Service veterans who spoke on the condition of anonymity out of fear of reprisal recalled experiencing a similar sort of shock about how government processes worked. A similar shock that Musk and his team, they say, are now discovering when they first came aboard, because they came from the private sector. Over time, many developed an appreciation for why certain things in government had to be treated with more care than in the private sector. No, government is not a business. It should not be run like one. The idea of the Silicon Valley tech bro mantra, quote, "move fast and break things," according to Cordell Schachter, who until last month was the chief information officer at the U.S. Department of Transportation. He said that may be acceptable to someone who owns a business and owns the risk. And if things don't go well, the damage is compartmentalized. But when you break things in government, you're breaking things that belong to people who did not sign up for that. But of course, Elon doesn't care. But in other encouraging news related to the almost certain eventual downfall of Elon Musk today, the stock market over the last few days has been a bit of a roller coaster ride, to say the least, mostly a downhill roller coaster ride, based largely on nervousness from investors about the damage that Donald Trump is doing to the national and the world economy, and inflation, which seems to be ticking back up again since Trump took office, and his persistent threats of tariffs and ensuing trade wars, including with friends, or previous friends anyway, like Mexico and Canada. All of this has got investors quite nervous, it seems. After the markets were attempting a comeback on Monday, midday, things then fell apart right after the news broke that Trump had again threatened 25% tariffs against Canada and Mexico to begin next week. We will see if that happens this time. We'll see if they actually get put in place. But that was enough to put the brakes on Monday's attempted comeback, which then tanked the markets again on Monday and continued that tanking again on Tuesday, all with no small thanks to the great businessman who we were all dumb enough to apparently elect as president. But all of this is personally hurting Musk as well, the richest man in the world, and hurting his businesses, for what it's worth, including the business that made him the wealthiest man in the world. Shares in Elon Musk's electric vehicle company, Tesla, kind of went over a cliff on Tuesday, even more than the market itself did, tanking after new sales data showed a massive plunge in sales of Tesla throughout Europe. According to The Guardian, new data from the European Automobile Manufacturing Association showed Tesla sales in the UK and the European Union dropped by nearly half, 45% year over year, and the company's share of the European carmaker itself got cut nearly in half over the same period, indicating waning demand for the U.S. carmaker's vehicles as its chief executive Elon Musk intervened repeatedly in politics on both sides of the Atlantic. Really ticking off the very people who would want to buy his electric vehicles. suggesting that Musk's interventions in European political affairs and his senior role in Trump's administration, defunding and depopulating the U.S. government, including shutting down its aid program, are all leading to a consumer backlash. Well, duh. And about time. In addition to becoming Trump's largest donor and governmental hatchet man, Musk has become a vocal supporter of Germany's far-right neo-Nazi AfD party in recent months and described it in January as the, quote, best hope for the future in Germany. The Nazis, they're the best hope for the future, says Elon Musk. On Monday, following the German parliamentary elections on Sunday, when the AfD came in second place behind the center-right party, whose leader called for independence from the U.S., given Trump's position on Ukraine and his threats of war, of a trade war with Europe, Musk called the neo-Nazi party's co-leader to congratulate her on the party's performance in Germany's national elections after it doubled its support from previous elections. Yes, the neo-Nazis are rising in Germany again.
Yeah, and Elon Musk is calling, leaders in other countries as if he himself is president.
He also waded into UK's politics, publicly accusing British Prime Minister Keir Starmer of and other senior politicians of covering up a scandal despite a lack of evidence to support Musk's claims. Go figure. And Emmanuel Macron, the French president, joined the Norwegian, British and German leaders in early January in responding to a barrage of hostile social posts from Musk backing far-right political parties and criticizing left-wing politicians in Europe. In response, the people now are speaking with their spending. Good for them. Tesla sold 1,277 new cars last month in Germany. That is its lowest monthly total since July of 2021, according to Bloomberg. Sales in France plummeted 63% in its worst performance in the country since August of 2022. The company also registered fewer vehicles in the UK than its Chinese electric car rival, BYD. For the very first time. Wow. A Chinese electric car did better in Great Britain than Tesla. And it's not as if all of this is because people don't want EVs anymore, because that's, you know, sort of what the line is. Oh, that's just because EVs, nobody wants them. They're not buying them. In fact, Tesla's sales fell by nearly 8% in a British EV market that grew by 42% last month. So sales are great, apparently, for EVs in Great Britain, at least for all the cars that aren't named Tesla. That compared to the same month last year, 42% down since the same month last year. EV sales overall are up. It's just Tesla's sales that are down, bigly. The slump came as the overall European market for new battery electric cars grew by 34%, just, not Tesla's. Three of the four largest markets in Europe, which together account for nearly two-thirds of all battery electric car sales, recorded double-digit gains. In Germany, more than 53%, Belgium, more than 37%, and the Netherlands, more than 28%. They just don't want Teslas. The European sales figures sent Tesla's share price diving by more than 8.5 percentage points on Tuesday, as the company's shares have lost nearly a quarter of their value since the start of the year. That equates to tens of billions of dollars lost by Elon Musk. Consumers overseas and here at home have otherwise targeted Tesla for boycotts to protest Musk's political interventions on behalf of far-right political parties. So yes, economic boycotts do work. The Tesla Cybertruck has become a particularly frequent target for vandalism, as anti-Musk activists have labeled the car a swastika car, after Musk flashed what neo-Nazi groups openly celebrated as a Heil Hitler salute. Parody ads are going up on bus stops in London. Did you see this one, Des?
Yes, I did.
Quote, goes from zero to 1939 in 3 seconds. Tesla, the swastika car. Ouch. But remember, if anything, these guys, Trump and Musk, they're supposed to at least be great businessmen. Turns out they're really not. At least Trump isn't. And you got to question how brilliant Musk's forays into far-right politics will ultimately turn out for him and his companies. But many Americans have still fallen for the great con that Donald Trump is one of the world's great businessmen. But it sure looks like a lot of folks are now finally beginning to have an awakening there as well, at least if new data out today tells us anything. The American consumer is getting worried about the economy, reports CNN Business on Tuesday. Economic jitters are showing up across several consumer sentiment surveys as the Trump administration aims to reconfigure America's trade relationship with the world, and inflation continues to be stubborn. The latest evidence comes from the Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index for February that was released on Tuesday morning. The index fell to 98.3, falling for the third straight month and marking the largest monthly decline in consumer confidence in this survey since August of 2021. So the largest decline in almost 4 years as expectations for inflation in the year ahead climbed. That coincides with the trends reflected in the University of Michigan's consumer survey for February. Home builders are also growing worried, according to the National Association of Home Builders. Even U.S. small businesses, which remain somewhat optimistic about deregulation and tax cuts, are in doubt now about the economy's future. The National Federation of Independent Businesses Uncertainty Index rose in January to its third highest reading on record. America's souring economic mood, driven by worries over Trump's aggressive approach to tariffs, is a stunning reversal from the brief burst of optimism after his election in November, CNN observes. Justin Wolfers, the economic professor at the University of Michigan, told CNN, quote, "The fact that consumers do not feel it's smooth sailing, you've got one very obvious suspect. That's the White House, which is sowing uncertainty just about everywhere, whether it comes to trade policy or foreign policy. For the Federal Reserve, it's critical that Americans have faith that inflation will eventually return to normal in the long run. Central bankers pay close attention to people's perception of prices because they can be self-fulfilling. If Americans expect inflation to pick up, well, then they modify their spending accordingly." Sentiment surveys do not necessarily predict future spending behavior, but they can. "Today's economic landscape is rife with uncertainty," notes CNN, "which may be affecting people's spending plans," according to a new Wells Fargo survey, also released on Tuesday. About three quarters of adults and teens surveyed across the country said that they plan now to reduce their spending, citing uncertainty in the economy. Michael Liersch, the head of advice and planning at Wells Fargo, said in a release, quote, "Consumer behaviors are shifting. The value of the dollar and what it is providing may not be as predictable anymore, which seems to be more pronounced for younger Americans." The survey showed that 82% of Gen Z adults and 79% of millennials plan to pare back their spending in the coming months. Great job, Don. If so, so much for Donald Trump's promised economy on rocket fuel. Business, major companies, they all watch this stuff really closely and they plan for it accordingly, which can then have a major effect on the overall economy. And that's exactly what grassroots organizers of a national protest set for this Friday are actually hoping for. We'll take a quick break, and Jonathan Simon of Who, What, Why will join us for some thoughts on that. That's straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
Five major corporations now control more than 80% of the media in the United States, but they don't control us. The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. You can make a difference. Support independent media. Drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Money, get away. Get a good job with more pay. Okay.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from Bradblog.com. In the U.S. House on Tuesday, Republicans were attempting to pass a budget resolution in advance of a March 14 deadline that will, unless the GOP can come up with a continuing resolution or a new budget to keep the government open, it'll shut down as of midnight that night. House Republicans, of course, are hoping to pass through a measure that would cut trillions of dollars from social services over the next 10 years in order to help pay for an extension to the 2017 Trump tax cuts, largely for, yes, corporations and the wealthy. But apparently, because cutting social services that people, you know, like and rely on and need, like Medicare and Medicaid and the SNAP program, which is food stamps, etc., because that is wildly unpopular among the American people, including many Trump voters, Republicans are now just, they've got a trick. Apparently, they're just calling for unspecified cutting targets. Is that exactly what they're doing? Without mentioning which programs are actually going to be cut, that we'll just, you know, we're going to target $200 billion.
And then you guys figure that out later.
So they hope to slash and burn the government for their rich friends and without specifying which programs are actually going to cut, which we know they are going to do because before they put this resolution on the floor, they had already put together a proposal detailing some of these deep, deep cuts that they hope to make happen. Here, for example, is Missouri Republican Congressman Jason Smith objecting to Fox News's former financial journalist turned MAGA knucklehead Maria Bartiromo, mentioning just some of the specifics of the GOP's planned cuts.
What do you want to say to those people who are upset about these cuts to the SNAP and nutrition assistance? $230 billion in cuts to SNAP and nutrition assistance?
For one, you can't say that it's cuts to SNAPs. This resolution just says the Ag Committee has to cut more than $200 billion. What you have is other people like the Democrats going out there saying you're going to cut Medicaid, you're going to cut benefits. Nowhere, Maria, in the resolution does it say what the cuts are. It just sets the goal and the target rate of how much we're going to cut.
So notice he doesn't say nowhere does it say we're going to cut that. We are not going to cut those things. He just says nowhere in there does it say anything about that.
We,
I don't know where they're getting that idea.
We don't use the words, therefore you can't say it.
So that's today's GOP kabuki theater. Pretend we have no idea what's going to be cut by the Ag Committee, which oversees the SNAP program as well as subsidies for farmers. So, I wonder which one they will cut for, you know, by $200 billion to pay for the budget and Trump's tax cuts. New Mexico Democrat Melanie Stansbury has a good guess, however, as she made clear on the House floor on Tuesday.
This is not a budget resolution. This is a blueprint for suffering, or as Elon Musk put it over the weekend, the spoils of war. Because these guys don't care how many people they hurt or how many families are going to suffer. It's about power and greed, and the GOP is enabling them. So we will not sit down and do it. We will not support this budget resolution, and we will not give them one
Women's time has expired.
Vote. And I will not be silent
the general from,
because we
the general from Massachusetts.
Will continue to fight.
You go, Congresswoman, Representative Melanie Stansbury of New Mexico on Tuesday. I like it. Meanwhile, as that fight finally begins to heat up in Congress, in addition to protests at state capitals and congressional offices around the country and pushback at town halls held over the past week by members of Congress in their local districts, another idea for protesting and taking action by we the people seems to be coming together this week, an effort to send a message about all of this, in this case, to big corporations, too many of whom appear to be going along with Trump and Musk's racist attacks on anti-discrimination measures, with companies lining up to sort of performatively do away with corporate diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. Well, this effort now seems to be gaining quite a bit of traction. For Friday, February 28, as a broader protest against, well, Elon Musk, Donald Trump, but the entire project to deconstruct the American constitutional order. It seems to be coming together, I say, at least if my inbox filled with folks asking me if I'm aware of this issue is any measure of that. It is, for what historian Heather Cox Richardson and a number of grassroots groups like the People's Union USA are describing as the first national collective action in response to the Trump-Musk assault on the nation. A 24-hour economic blackout, as they are calling it, on Friday, February 28, from midnight to 11:59 p.m. Turn off the economy, says a widely circulated leaflet on this, credited to Heather Cox Richardson. Show who really holds the power. Buy only essentials, absolute necessities like food, medicine, emergency supplies. But the goal is to buy nothing. If you must spend, only support small local businesses. Why? Well, corporations, banks, and so forth only care about their sacred bottom line, says the leaflet. You can disrupt the economy for just one day to send a powerful message. If they fail to listen, the next blackout will be longer. Make history together. No purchases in store, online, no Amazon, Walmart, Best Buy, nowhere, no fast food, gas, major retailers, no credit and debit cards for non-essential spending. We can do this together. February 28, 24-hour economic blackout begins. And again, this leaflet circulated by historian Heather Cox Richardson. All right, well, as our friend Jonathan Simon writes about all of this over at Who, What, Why this week, quote, it is no secret that the response thus far to Donald Trump and Elon Musk's shock and awe assault on democracy has been tepid and uncoordinated, whether because they are shocked and awed or just exhausted and discouraged. Millions of Americans who are watching the world that they took for granted burn have not settled on an effective set of actions to stop the madness. Some believe the courts, wigged out congressional Republicans, or maybe even what's left of the generals will somehow save us. Many seem to believe resistance is futile. Others just can't figure out what form of resistance has the best chance of success. No great leader of MLK stature has thus far emerged to rally millions to an anti-Trump, pro-democracy banner. Well, organizers of what is being called a one-day economic blackout on Friday, February 28, are trying a different approach, writes Simon. Let's see what a little consumer power can do. Well, what can it do? And how little would it actually be? Joining us now is Jonathan Simon, a longtime election integrity champion and author of Code Red, Computerized Election Theft and the New American Century, who now serves as a senior editor at Who, What, Why, the nonprofit news outlet founded by award-winning investigative journalist and author and our friend Russ Baker. Jonathan Simon, it has been a while, but welcome back to the broadcast, amigo.
Thank you, Brad. Thanks for having me on. And you're right, it's been a while. We've sort of watched the world go by, and we're, doing all we can. I know you're doing all you can.
Well,
and
I think we all are here. And I got to say, Jonathan, it's actually kind of nice to talk to you about something that is not election integrity related, at least in general, for change, even if I'm a bit shorter on time today than I had previously hoped. But reading your piece at Who, What, Why. I kind of sense, Jonathan, that you were struggling, as I am, with, well, just how much of an effect that a protest like this, a spending blackout, how much it might ultimately have. You sort of thought through and sort of rounded up some of the pros and cons of such an action. So I'd like to sort of summarize those with you quickly today. What do you see as the downsides? Let's start with that. So at least then maybe we can end on a more positive note. What are the downsides?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, you know, this comes from a non-expert in logistics and a non-expert in economics, but, you know, a pretty careful observer of how people function and, you know, how things tend to go mm-hmm. in this age of ours, this new age. You know, the minuses, I think, are not that hard to see. It's difficult to organize something like this mm-hmm. at scale. There have been attempts in the past, you know, Grab Your Wallet is one that's, I think, still alive and kicking, to take economic actions, but to really, you know, have an impact and do it at scale requires a lot of organization, a lot of buy-in. It also requires, you know, really clear branding and messaging. What is it exactly that you don't want people to do? What do you want people to do? What kind of demands are associated with it? And that's also difficult to pull together quickly. It's hard to compel compliance. You don't know what people are doing, so you just kind of have to cross your fingers and, you know, hope that something's happening out there. Mm-hmm. It's possible. It may be possible to measure compliance because businesses are pretty sensitive to shopping patterns, mm-hmm. and they may weigh in and say, yeah, this had an impact or this didn't have an impact. But it's really hard to compel it in advance. And there's no spectacle to this. There's no flag to rally to. There's no, you know, steps to march on, steps to march up to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that cuts both ways. In one way, it kind of makes it easier. There's no real time suck involved and there's no travel involved. But on the other hand, it's hard to get as quite as rah-rah and as enthusiastic about something that's fundamentally passive, something that you're not doing. One other thing is the potential self-harm. If this thing is successful, let's say that, you know, this expands and grows and you do have a major impact on the economy. Mm-hmm. Well, we're part of that economy too. We're shareholders, some of us, and, you know, in some of these corporations, we have business interests. We have just, you know, mortgage rates and mm-hmm. all sorts of things that can be affected by a serious economic setback. And this has the goal in many ways of causing exactly that. So there's the self-harm problem. And then there's the very last thing that I could think of is, you know, the potential for retaliatory economic actions, which would then, you know, on the part of, let's say, the MAGAs who are upset going in the other direction, strike back, and then you wind up in some sort of economic total war, which is a pretty, you know, it's not where you want to be if you can possibly avoid it. One other thing that, you know, has been broached to me about this is, well, you know, if people don't buy on Friday, well, they're just going to go in and buy on Saturday, you know, 12:01 a.m. Saturday morning, you know, Amazon's going to light up with all the things people didn't buy on Saturday.
Right.
I'm not so sure that's true, because that's looking at people's kind of robotically. There's a spirit to this thing. If it's going to work at all, there's got to be a spirit, and that's going to carry across. So it's not just robotically, okay, I'm not buying for these 24 hours and now I'm going to buy everything I would have bought, you know, 6 hours ago. I don't think it's going to work that way. I think there will be some, you know, effect of deferred purchasing, mm-hmm. but I think that on the whole, something like this can succeed if you have a period of 24 hours and then potentially expand it. My God, we might get all the way up to a week or a month or something if people really get hooked, as it were, if they get into this really into the spirit of it and recognize that it has impact, that it has potential Then you could really see a big expansion.
Yeah, that's if it's successful and if it can be measured. One of the things that occurs to me is that if I am MAGA at this point and I see that all the pinko libs out there are going to not buy anything on Friday, well, I'm going to buy twice as much on Friday. I mean, doesn't that, just essentially kill the entire plan? Not that we want anybody to hear that over these airwaves. I'm sure they're not listening, but yeah, no, you know what I mean?
We could add that to the list of minuses, which is frankly quite long. I mean, in the article I wrote, I expressed quite a bit of ambivalence, as you noted, and the list of minuses in many ways is longer than the list of pluses. I came out on the side of let's go do it anyway. But the list of minuses is pretty long, and that is one of them. I would say that, weighed against that is the fact that at this point, for worse or worse, we're a country that really has two very different information streams. Mm-hmm. And this is being marketed primarily to the non-MAGA down the non-MAGA information stream. I don't think it's something that they're talking about over on, OANN or Fox News. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah.
But it is always possible that is one of the forms that retaliation takes is, we're going to mess up your action. We're just going to go out and buy a bunch of flat screen TVs and other gizmos. All right. We're going to find out, but there's really no way to find out other than doing it and then potentially refining it or changing it or morphing it as necessary based on what is successful about it and what is not successful.
And I know you're not, speaking of what's successful, how do we measure, never mind how we measure it. What would be the signal that, what's the message that is being sent to the large companies and to the politicians that they support if this protest action actually is successful, however that is measured? If the companies say, oh, yeah, our business is way down on that Friday, February 28th, what message is actually being sent to the companies and to the politicians and so forth?
Yeah, I think that was number two on my list of minuses, and I might have skipped over it very quickly. And that is the muddiness, potentially, of the messaging. How I look at this is really, from a strategic standpoint, sort of like a, I hate to put it this way, but like a nuclear bomb test. You're not actually blowing up a city. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're blowing up something, under the ocean or, somewhere where it's really not having the actual impact that the thing is designed to have. Now, of course, we banned nuclear testing for the most part for a reason. This fortunately doesn't have any nuclear fallout, but it could have economic fallout. And so the idea is not necessarily to say, aha, see, we got you, and your bottom line just dropped by 1.3%, mm-hmm. and now we're demanding return of DEI and firing of Elon Musk, et cetera. I don't think, it's not that. It's more the beta test of a potentially very powerful weapon, which then needs to be expanded, and it also needs to be focused. So, when you've shown that you have a powerful weapon, then you can start articulating and bullet pointing demands
of what I might do with this weapon if I decide to really use it.
Yeah, and what you want in return for not using the weapon. So, this is very, very early stage. There is enormous latent power in buying choices. Consumer spending, people have a hard time believing this, but consumer spending accounts for more than two-thirds of the annual GDP of this country, gross domestic product. It is enormous part of our economy, and it requires more than half the country to be spending. Corporations and the economy in general are exquisitely sensitive to even small downturns or small deficits. So you know, it really requires that everybody be doing what they do best in this day and age, which is going out and shopping and buying.
Yes.
And the vast majority of that is, I'll say the word, crap that people uh-huh. don't need, or really good things that people don't need. I mean, you know, we have a 58-inch flat screen, but we want an 85-inch flat screen. Okay, fine. Do you need the 85-inch flat screen? No. Do you need the iPhone 28? No. These are all things that, you know, they're very tempting. They're part of, you know, our identity. They're a part of our sense of power when we exercise our, you know, our wallet and we make a purchase. They're very, you know, people live for this stuff, but they don't have to. And, you know, a recognition that there's something maybe more important, a recognition that economic power can translate into political power might be just what's needed at this particular time, with people looking around and saying, well, we marched and we did our town hall and we did all these things and nothing happened. There really is a paucity, if not an outright absence, of great alternatives in terms of how you oppose a president, a leader, a regime that has gotten into power by one means or another, and now plans to exercise that power really ruthlessly. And we're seeing that, I mean, the level of emergency, the DEFCON level, just really kicked up a lot in the last few days with the purges at the Pentagon, mm-hmm. the appointment of Dan Bongino to be second at the FBI. My God,
yeah.
You know, this is a signal. It's a very clear signal. If anybody wasn't, you know, aware before, that we are going to meet force in response to resistance. And this is one thing, let me just say that,
yeah.
you know, you can't meet an economic boycott with the Insurrection Act.
Yeah, good point. Good point. If America took to the streets, if we took to the nation's capital by the millions, it would be just the ticket for these guys to, you know, push back with the military, with whoever. You can't force someone to buy things. That said, you know, Jonathan, Simon, general strikes have worked in the past, you know, larger strikes for longer periods. And this isn't such a strike, but it could develop into one. I do wonder, you know, if Americans have the fortitude to stop spending for a longer time, much less even for one day. It is, after all, pretty much what we do in this country at this point. We buy things. As you put it, we buy crap. But it does feel to me like, I got to say, you know, reading all of your pros and cons, and I'll point folks there to the longer piece on this, it kind of feels almost literally like the least we can do at this point to try and save our country and our democracy, or at least send a message that we, the people, have some agency here and we don't have to take it sitting down. I assume this means you're going to participate and not buy anything on Friday.
That is true. I had an appointment for a haircut. I canceled that.
Attaboy.
Yeah, I mean, my hair is going to get long, but, you know, one day ain't going to do it. And we know that. And they know that. It's going to take more. And, you know, I said, look, at the end, at conclusion of my article, I basically said, if I felt that it could help get our democracy back or save it, you know, I would take this pledge for the rest of the year. Hell, I'd take it for the rest of Trump's term. I can live without those things. You know, it feels like a terrible, terrible burden. But if you put it in historical perspective, if you put it in global political perspective, I mean, think Ukraine, think Sudan, think yep. whatever. I mean, this is really, I mean, it's basically cutting your nails.
That's...
And we grew up soft. Let's face it, we grew up in the, you know, world's most stable democracy. Mm-hmm. We really haven't, I mean, yeah, there was the civil rights movement, there was the anti-Vietnam War, but for most of our lives, you and me, mm-hmm. You know, we have basically had it pretty, pretty easy. And the need to go out and potentially, you know, put your your life on the line, or even, you know, change your buying habits, really hasn't been there. And we've taken it for granted, and we want it on a platter. And now, I mean, the only thing you can say, I mean, it's not positive about Trump, but it has the potential to galvanize us and wake us up. And, you know, woke is not in vogue right now, but really we need to wake up.
There you go.
And that, you know, this could be the start of it. Am I like, you know, oozing optimism? Absolutely not. You know me damn well.
Yeah, I was going to say,
as a pessimist,
I would be more worried if you were oozing optimism about anything, yeah. Jonathan Simon. I got to get out. Thank you, brother. Yeah, like I said, I think it's literally the least we can do. So why not? The article over at Who, What, Why is Friday, February 28. No shot blackout, the start of something big. Maybe. We'll see how it goes. Jonathan Simon, as I noted, is a longtime election integrity champion and author of Code Red. He is now the senior editor at Who, What, Why, the nonprofit reader-supported news outlet at whowhatwhy.org. Jonathan, always great catching up with you, my friend. Let's do it a little bit sooner next time. And good
Thank
luck
you,
on,
Brad.
And good luck with
Thanks
that.
For having me.
Good luck with that that haircut next week.
All right. Let's Thanks. See what happens Friday.
Thank you,
All right,
sir.
Man.
Hilariously, you just said it's literally the least we can do.
It is, yeah.
And I think that that is the key right there.
Yeah.
That, you know, that is one way to get the corporate media to cover what is going on, the coup that is going on, the hostile government takeover that's going on, and the public pushback. Give the media something they can cover. Just complaining online, you know, that doesn't really do it. But if you give them something that they can say, oh, look over here, they can report on that.
Wow, you got some passion about this. Does this mean that on Fridays, because, you know, it's usually Free Fry Fridays at one of my favorite fast food restaurants that I enjoy
you
a Coke
manage.
And free fries
you
to celebrate
manage.
The end of the week. You're saying none of that?
Correct.
Week?
You can manage without it for one day. Hold on for one day.
All right. For one more day. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks again to Jonathan Simon. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can always download it for free, let's say this Friday, when you won't be out enjoying free fries, at bradblog.com. And with all the money you're saving, I think it's okay to support local businesses. Is that what I am? I don't know. At bradblog.com. Hit a donate button over there. Help us stay on your public airwaves, whether you do it on Friday or any other day. But you'll send a stronger message if you do it on Friday. That's the right time. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. You can always find me on the social medias, particularly Blue Sky, at the Brad Blog. That is it, other than to say happy birthday to Desi Aww, Doyen.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being willing to work on your birthday. I was going to say I'd take you out to dinner Friday, but that's canceled too. Anyway, we'll see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.